You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 235. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you out of my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show from Philadelphia, PA, Mr. John Gentile.
But I am not in Philadelphia, PA, Adam White. I am in Milpitas, California, which is right near San Jose, which is wonderfully situated between San Francisco, between Oakland, between San Jose, and between Santa Cruz.
Sure, but you're from Philly.
Well, I'm from Philly, yes.
So, also joining us on tonight's show from, I remember, it's been a while, Florida?
I'm living in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale. You know, there's a lot of old Canadian people that go to Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, tell me all about it. I see you guys December and January. Going to a hockey game in December is awesome down here. It's like 75% French speaking.
Mr. Mark Little.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. The three of us are on a show. This is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about the things that happened on Punk News in the past week. If anyone wants to email us or get a hold of us, it is podcast@punknews.org. You find us on Twitter at Punk News or on the web at, well, you know. So, yeah, what are we going to talk about this week, guys? I guess we're going to start with some Dwarves news. This being really the Dwarves
podcast. The Dwarves channel.
So, yeah, let's talk about something that happened to the Dwarves. So, the Dwarves, if you visited their website over the past weekend, this has been the weekend of we're talking February, what is it? The 11th?
Today's February 11th.
Yeah. So, you guys will hear this when this episode comes out in July. But if you visited the Dwarves website over this past weekend, you would have seen, instead of being greeted with normal Dwarves stuff like nudity and blood, there was a bunch of Arabic text, quotes from the Quran, and Islamic prayers being played. Well, it turns out that the website was hacked by a group in Tunisia that posts pro-Islamic statements on hacked sites. The hacker, he referred to himself by the name Hani Zavi, and the hacked site featured a link to a Facebook profile that boasted about all of the various hacking feats of this group. So, all that stuff has since been taken down. The Dwarves have had their site put back, but there you go. So the Dwarves have some online intrigue, I guess, to deal with. Frontman Black Dahlia, he went and he talked to a security expert about this. The unnamed expert said that The guy who hacked them is in a group called the Falaja team. They're based out of Tunisia, and they like to brag about their hacking achievements. They aren't exactly hiding who they are. Most of them are, what does it say here? So they've taken down some U.S. and African government sites, and they've apparently ticked off some people that they shouldn't. But anyways, though, John. Here we have the real world encroaching on your fandom, as your beloved Dwarves have been the next victim of extremism.
Well, let me put it this way. First of all, you can't buy this kind of publicity. The Dwarves are famous for the crazy stories that they get in. You know, one of the most craziest Dwarf stories is that they claimed their guitarist got killed in Philadelphia, so they got fired from the record label after it wasn't true, after they received, like, a bunch of, like, flowers and donations and stuff. Then, you know, frontman Black Dahlia got his throat cut open by a crazy guy with a broken bottle, which is a true story. They're famous for fighting at shows and all this crazy stuff. This is another thing that the Dwarves have, another hijink the Dwarves have gotten themselves into, and really it's a great story. You can't buy this kind of publicity, and I just think it's wonderful. And I think they're laughing with it. I think they think it's funny, even though I know that Black was initially he was pretty pissed off about it, and I don't blame him. Here's the bigger thing to take from this. You know, a lot of people around the web, especially Punk News, they say the dwarves are sexist. You know, you shouldn't be posting this kind of stuff. You shouldn't be posting that kind of stuff. It's too risque. It's too tasteless. Well, I challenge the anti-dwarves people with this. If a radical extremist religious group agrees with you, what does that say about your point of view? That's what I'm saying. Further, it underscores that the dwarves are interesting, that they are creating dangerous and daring art, which most punk bands aren't these days, further underlying why the dwarves are one of the greatest punk bands and rock and roll bands ever.
Now, I guess so this begs the question. Were they hit by this hacker group, do you think, because of the fact that they are the dwarves and they talk about and do the things that they do? Was this merely one of these crimes of opportunity by which, you know, they detected that whatever software they were using was out of date and had a vulnerability and that they could exploit it, and so they did?
I think it's a combination. I don't think this extremist group knows about the dwarves and the dwarves' zany exploits, but I do think they were deciding what website to hack into, and they saw this one with these naked girls on the cover, and they said, we will punish these infidels for liking naked girls, because as we all know, you're a horrible, sinful person if you like naked girls, and so you should be punished. And so I think they saw that there was naked girls on the website. They say, this will be the website we punish because they are, you know, showing naked girls, which is something you should never, ever do, and which means you're a bad person if you do.
I have a couple of questions. Do either of you guys know how long the website had been taken down, or, you know, how long that the image has been covered up? And I'm just curious, John, did you actually talk to Blag about this?
Yeah, a little bit. I did, yeah. Just a little bit.
And you said he was angry about it.
Yeah, he was pissed off initially.
Okay, because the comment that he I mean, it's typical Blag, the comment that I'm reading on the website right now, what he said about it. But it seemed to be that he took it
very much. Well, why don't you read it, Mark? Why don't you read it, Mark?
Well, commenting on the hacking, he stated, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize for fucking Honey's sister. I thought it was his mom. Feel free to fuck with this clown, which is very typical dwarves, I would say. And it seems to me that he's taking it somewhat tongue-in-cheek. So my question for you is, did he get over it relatively quickly, or was it something that he talked down from?
Blag is a phenomenal artist, but he's also a smart businessman. That's why he's been in the band as long as he has, while many bands have fallen apart. So I think he was pissed off because it really did, like, they hacked into, like, their merch system, so he couldn't sell stuff. People couldn't go to the website.
And okay.
I think he just felt pissed off that, like, somebody, like, destroyed his website, at least temporarily. But after he got over his initial feelings of anger, he saw this as an opportunity to promote the dwarves, and that's exactly what happened, you know. So it just goes to show that terrorism does not work, because it only makes you stronger, because it gives you free press. And I gotta say, it just goes to show that the dwarves really are an interesting, daring band that, you know, if you can get, like, a certain group to hate you, based on, you know, some outdated belief system they have, that means you're really doing something effective, and it means the dwarves are modernizing the world.
And how soon do you think it'll be before the dwarves have a song out about this?
Well, they already have a song called "This Jihad" from like 2004. But I bet you Blag Daddy or the band in the next year will release a song making fun of this incident.
You just said the dwarves are modernizing the world.
I am, and here's why. Like these religious extremists that are still stuck in, was it 734 AD? Like, they're mad that the dwarves exist. They try to destroy the dwarves. Therefore, if this outdated system, you know, system that, you know, women are less than men and women should be covered and all this kind of thing, the dwarves are fighting against that ancient belief, and therefore they are modernizing the world. The dwarves are taking the world into the 21st century.
That almost sounds like the next album title.
Actually, it really does, doesn't it? So anyways... speaking of rampaging punk rock groups that blend pop punk with classic punk, Teenage Bottle Rocket, they've released a new song. And the song is called Nothing Else Matters When I'm With You, which is a Sly Metallica reference. And the video is Adam White's favorite kind of video. It's a lyric video. So I know the Punk News kids are super excited about this band. Teenage Bottle Rocket has been a long time Punk News favorite. This is going to be the band's first release on Rise Records. Did you guys check this out? Are you guys excited for Teenage Bottle Rocket?
I'm iffy on this. And I'm not sure why. I generally like everything that Teenage Bottle Rocket do. I like a lot of people, was not a big fan of that, what was it, the American Deutschbag 7-inch that they had out between their last record and this one. It just it didn't really work for me. This is, I kind of lyrically like this. I like all the clever wordplay with Metallica songs and album titles and stuff like that they were doing. I mean, like, that's fun. I was listening to this though, and there was a part of me that was thinking, this feels a little bit down tempo for what I want from this band. And I don't know if that's like, if that's a sign of maturity on their part or what, but I'm it's a well put together little pop song and everything, but I don't know. It feels like it's maybe lacking some teeth.
It's because they signed Rise Records.
You're blaming the label?
That's exactly it. And I understand what you mean. Honestly, when I heard it, and I'm all in, I love Bottle Rock. I've loved almost everything they've done, and much like you, Adam, unlike the American Deutschbag. But much like you, when I heard it, I thought it did sound maybe a half step slower than previous stuff. But I'm all in for this record. I'm really excited to hear it. And it also just underlines the fact that Teenage Bottle Rocket are closet metal fans. Just another song that they do to kind of pay tribute to heavy metal heroes. And what's the singer's name? Cody? Wearing his heavy metal t-shirts on stage also. So yeah, I'm all into it.
John, what's this band? How's this band work for you? Because they're, on the one hand, when they first started to get a lot of attention, a lot of it was because they were playing kind of this really fast, goofy Ramones style stuff. But at this point, Teenage Bottle Rocket's a known quantity. They've been around for a little while. They've put out a bunch of stuff. They've been on Fat, which is a big label. They're on Rise, which is a bigger label. Did this ever work for you? Does this still work for you?
Well, my big thing is that why would I listen to Ramones Core when I could listen to the Ramones? And so I think a lot of bands, not just Teenage Bottle Rocket, kind of had that. It's like, what's the point of doing watered down Ramones or Ramones without, like, you're not going to be Joey Ramone at being Joey Ramone. Almost no artist has the soul, the sadness, the cleverness, and the whimsy that Joey Ramone has. You're not going to be Johnny Ramone. I mean, no one plays guitar like Johnny Ramone. It's might be simple, but there's a certain technique to his playing that gained him an extremely wide range of sound. You're not going to be Dee Dee at being Dee Dee, because so few people come from such a messed up background but have such a poet's soul as Dee Dee Ramone. You will never beat those guys at that. You know what I mean? And you're not going to beat Tommy at creating that whole beat. I mean, Tommy Ramone created the entire Ramones beat, if you will, and so all these bands aren't directly influenced by Tommy Ramone. That being said, I've heard this album. This album, it's a rocking album. It kicks along, and I think if you're a Teenage Bottle Rocket fan, you'll definitely like this album. I would definitely say it's their best album. And you know, I've been whining about all these Third Eye Blind and Goo Goo Dolls inspired punk bands, and I'm so bored and tired of these mid-tempo safe bands. I'm excited that we have a band that tears along, that speeds along, that kicks out the jams, that sings about girls and horror movies and that kind of stuff. So I think it's a needed thing in the current punk rock scene. And I think Teenage Bottle Rocket...
So I'm being a little bit...
Oh, what's that?
I was going to say, so I'm being a little bit over worried that they've gotten slow.
Yeah, the record actually might be their fastest record, to tell you the truth. It's pretty fast.
Oh, wow.
I think they just released the single because people like, because there's so much of this Third Eye Blind punk, people want ballads. All people want is ballads anymore. They forgot that punk is punk, I guess. And so they put out the slower song. But this album tears along. And I think if Teenage Bottle Rocket does something daring or risky, I think they've got the capability of going from a good band to a great band if they do something weird or daring on the next release.
Cool. That's very heartening. That makes me excited. I really want to hear this now. How did you hear this?
I
just think of the same thing.
I interviewed the band.
Oh. That's a way. All right. So
what, you guys just like sit around and hang out and listen to the new record?
No, I called them all separately, and I got the album streamed beforehand. So
they
were cool. And of course, we got to give a shout out to Miguel. Miguel's a cool guy. He's the bass player in the band. just a good dude, Miguel from Teenage Bottle Rocket.
I've met him a couple times. I totally agree. He's a really nice guy.
And he's been on this podcast before.
Yes, he has.
So, yeah, there you go. All right, well, there's another song and another video that came out this past week. The Menzingers released a music video for the track Where Your Heartache Exists, which was off their 2014 Epitaph release Rented World. The band is currently heading out on tour with Taking Back Sunday and Let Live. So this video is one of the... This is one of the more down-tempo ballady songs on Rented World. This as soon as I saw that this video was in our list of talking points, John, I could hear your complaint starting to resonate from the future, traveling through time into the past where I was standing and thinking, "Oh, I can hear John complaining." I can hear future John.
Pull up a seat, kids, and get ready.
With his robot legs and his flying car sitting atop his throne of skulls. I can hear future John. So, current John is Pat once future John. I don't know. John, what's the problem with this?
Well, I'm not trying to be a hater. Everyone says, oh, they're such nice guys, and they are nice guys. But people do come to the Punk News podcast for a degree of honesty. So I got to be honest. This is not my bag, man. I'm just not into this at all. It's punk rock is supposed to be daring, exciting, challenging. Doesn't have to be fast. Doesn't have to be loud, but it can be, you know? And this just sounds like 90s radio rock. And, I mean, even like, was it, I actually coined this term Third Eye Blind punk, which has kind of caught on, so I'm kind of proud of that. I call this Third Eye Blind punk. But even Third Eye Blind has songs about doing meth and having sex with prostitutes. This is just gentle, gentle, gentle music. And the kids seem to love this, but I would add that there's a tremendous amount of hype to this record, and it petered out pretty quickly when the hype came out. And honestly, if you look at a lot of the up-and-coming bands, I think punk rock in general is headed towards a more dangerous, more exciting area again. This band, I'm sure they're nice guys, and this is not the worst music in the world. I'm just not into it. It's just not what punk is to me. And I'm not saying punk has to have rules, but generally, well, actually, maybe the rule about punk is it should be daring or challenging or exciting. For me, this is safe, gentle, and quiet, and that's just not why I come to punk rock. And I'm just not into it at all.
I have to somewhat agree. I like the term Third Eye Blind punk, by the way.
Thank you.
I liked the Menzingers' first few records. Yeah, very good. I liked their first few records, and I've seen them play a few times, and it's a good show and everything. But this last record, there was a lot of hype with it, and I wasn't one of the people that got into that hype. It wasn't a record that I was into at all. I thought it was kind of boring, to be honest. And this video just kind of keeps that idea burning bright, except for the fact they have Roman candles, which I think spices anything up. But other than that, it's definitely not my bag either.
So I'll be a little bit more charitable to this, because I like that record, and it was, but I can absolutely see how this song, you know, fits that stereotype that you're talking about to a T. And I mean, on the one hand, I get why a band like this can be pressured is the wrong word, can go down this path of writing songs like this, because these guys can write a good hook. They can write, you know, stuff that I think from like a classical pop song structure standpoint, they can do that, and they can do it well, and they did it when they were writing straight punk songs. So I can get why they'll go, like, you know what, we're gonna write, you know, a completely, you know, non-offensive, non-aggressive on its, you know, ballad thing and play it straight because we can, and we can do it well. And I get that. And I also get why, you know, why labels like Epitaph, when they're hearing this band, you know, back before they were signed, back when they were, you know, a smaller up and coming punk band, you know, that's the kind of thing that guys like Brett have an ear for, but they listen for. They go, you know, like, you know, these guys know what they're doing as far as songwriting. They're getting better at it. They can be big if they write that right song. I'm okay with I don't know. I understand that happens. I guess like that's the business, right? I get that. But when you see and records have songs like this on them from time to time, and again, that does, you know, I'm not going to judge on that. But this song, they went to the point of going and making it into a video and everything, and the video itself, you know, it's the band playing and then them walking around. So there's no, there's Roman candles in it, but whatever. There's not a lot going on in this. So what it seems like is they had the record. The record happened to have this song on it. And then someone more with their marketing hat went, you know, this is a pretty heartfelt, you know, song about love and loss that would appeal to, you know, the general public that likes heartfelt love songs about love and loss. So, you know, we got to go make a video, and let's just, you know, let's not get too wacky with this. Let's just have the boys, you know, they'll stand around and they'll look good and play music and, you know, walk about and, you know, share some laughs or whatever, right? Like the actual end product here, and a music video is a product, right? Like the actual end product does feel very, I don't know, very, very calculated to try to appeal to the widest possible audience. And I don't know if the product of the music video in this case necessarily reflects the, I guess maybe why the song was written, how the song plays as far as the rest of the record goes. So I don't know. There's a difference there. I'm drawing kind of like a line between, like, you know, the song is the part of the wider work, where I never had a problem with it, and this is a music video and a single, which I kind of do have a problem with.
You know, I was thinking, why are the kids so into this band? And I've got a theory, but I'm interested. Why do you guys think? Because I do not think this band would have flew in the punk scene in the early 90s, in the mid 90s. Why do you guys think the kids are so into this? I've got a theory, but I wonder if you have a theory instead.
Well, I mean, for myself, listening to the first records that they did, Chamberlain Waits, for example, I mean, it was, number one, a new band, so it's easy to get excited about new bands. But also just, it was earnest, it was loud, it was something that you could kind of scream along with, and it just kind of gave you a visceral feeling. It was something that was easy to get into. It wasn't something you had to work for, if you understand what I mean. But I just feel like as they progressed, and really as it's gone on to this record, they've just become, whether it's my taste for them or whether it's the band themselves, it's just become boring, for lack of a better way to say it. I don't know if Adam agrees or disagrees with that.
I would say they've become a known quantity. Like we kind of knew going into this record what this record was gonna sound like, and then it sounded like that. To me, there's no question why people liked, you know, why people liked Chamberlain Waits, why people liked the EP before that, A Lesson in the Abuse of Information Technology. And if you go back and, like, I'm going back and, like, looking at our reviews of that we ran back in the day. And what are people referencing in the reviews? People are referencing The Clash. People are referencing Billy Bragg. And that was, you know, that was a little bit more, I think, in line with the kind of stuff that they were doing at the time. And, you know, over time, they've been on this track where they've become more melodic and they've become more, you know, I guess 90s influenced, I guess, if you want to stick with John.
Well, John, when you said it sounds like something that you would have heard on 90s radio, and you're absolutely correct. It does sound like something from the mid to late 90s.
So I don't question why people got into them at the start, really, at all. And I think for the most part, I've been okay with the direction they've gone in, only because I'm okay with a band taking a direction, if that makes any sense to anyone. Like, I'm okay with a band going, you know what, we're here, we want to go from A to B, and this is the trajectory, and you can come along with us or you can't. I'm okay with a band that has conviction to do that. But I think kind of where they've ended up is not super compelling.
See, I have a much more speculative and ivory tower theory. My theory is this, is that if you were around in the 90s, they played, you know, Bush on the radio, they played Goo Goo Dolls, they played Third Eye Blind, they played all these boring, horrible bands, you know, like, with, you know, that grainy-ass, boring voice, and the music was so horrible, and you're like, give me some power, give me some energy, you know, and so a lot of great punk rock bands were around in the 90s, a lot of great punk rock bands around now, but I'm saying this is a popular punk rock band, and I think the reason this band is popular is because rock radio, rock FM radio is almost nil, and you know, with the stuff they're putting out, maybe that's a good thing, but you know, hip-hop, dance, pop is way bigger than rock now more than ever. So I wonder if the younger people, they don't hear, you know, all these bullshit, you know, bands like Bush, bands like Goo Goo Dolls, bands like Spin Doc. Actually, I like the Spin Doctors, but those kinds of bands on the radio, that they, this is a new sound to them, and they're like, wow, you know, guitar-based music, I haven't heard anything like this, when they didn't have the chance to get so sick of Gavin Rosdale doing a Jesus pose in 1997. You know what I mean? Let's play some Nightbirds. Let's play some Nightbirds.
Oh, man. Wait, let me just say really quick, just speaking of Third Eye Blind, and this is especially for you, John, I've actually had to see Third Eye Blind before, and it was opening for a band that John and I are both really big fans of. John, who do you think that would be?
Third Eye Blind opening for a band. Sublime?
No, you and I are big fans of this band.
Village People?
You're so close. The Rolling Stones.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes sense because, like, yeah, I saw Blues Traveler open for the Rolling Stones. Oh, man.
Actually, now I think about it, I also saw the Spin Doctors open for the Rolling Stones.
I actually think Two Princes is a catchy song, to tell you the truth.
Say that again?
I think Two Princes is a catchy song.
Well, if you want to call me Baby John, just go ahead now.
Let's play some Nightbirds, man. Nightbirds rule. What Nightbirds song do you guys want to hear? Let's play Escape. Let's play Born to Die in Suburbia. Classic Nightbirds track. Let's do it.
Okay.
This is the Nightbirds doing Born to Die in Suburbia off the album Born to Die in Suburbia off Deranged Records. I think it's Deranged, right?
Nope.
What label is it off of?
Hold on. It's in front of me. It wasn't Deranged. It was on... Where are you, record? Why aren't you categorized? Who sorted you? God damn it.
Grave Mistake Records.
Grave Mistake, yes.
And we'll be right back on this compelling podcast later on.
Isn't it? Back, that was Nightbirds with Born to Die in Suburbia off of Born to Die in Suburbia. So speaking of Nightbirds, they're headed into the studio. They're going to record their Fat Records debut this spring, and this is going to be what, their third record at this point and first for Fat. In a post over on Facebook, the band said, "Very excited that we have completed writing and we have booked studio time this April and May to record our third album and our first with Fat Records. Extremely pleased with how these songs came out, and I think any fan of our previous output will be as well. Can't wait to get this in your hands later this year. So that's all we know. No songs, no music yet. No real word on the direction outside that we should like it. I'm excited for this. John, you must be excited for this.
I am excited. Let me tell you, Nightbirds rule, man. Nightbirds rock. They've got a dangerous sound. They've got a weird sound, a wild sound. It's indebted to classic punk rock, but it feels extremely fresh. They've been playing one new song live. I heard it live about 4 or 5 months ago. It rocks, man. And I got to say, man, I was never a huge Fat Records guy. Fat Records has really been locking it down over the past year and a half or so. Nightbirds, Dwarves, Bad Cop, a couple of other stuff on Morning Glory. Fat Records is really becoming like one of my most favorite record labels. I mean, really, it's a lot of good stuff on Fat lately.
I feel like Fat's always been, they've always been like that to me. There was a time back in the 90s where I wasn't super interested in the stuff that they had coming out all the time, when a lot of it was, oh, this is going to get me in trouble. When a lot of it kind of sounded like Lagwagon for a while. They were totally guilty of living up to the stereotype of having a Fat Record sound at that point, and it wasn't super interesting to me. But man, like, you know, if you want to like look at like Fat's trajectory and Epitaph's trajectory, I'm constantly sort of interested in stuff that Fat ends up putting out, or at least even if it's something that I'm not going to get, I think it's kind of, I don't know. I want to hear it when there's a new band that signs the Fat that I've never heard of. I want to go check it out to see if I'll like it. Epitaph, you know, those guys could like have like 10 new bands that signed to them, and I probably won't go check out any of them unless I've heard them in some other context. Like that, the label's goodwill has just been burned in me.
Yeah, well, I will say, I think Fat must be a pretty decent record label. Like, I don't know if they, like, you know, pay the highest royalty rate, but I bet you Fat does what they say they're going to do, because bands routinely stay with them, you know, like 3 or 4 records, and also established bands also put out records with Fat. So I think Fat is probably a pretty square label when it comes to the business side.
Now that I think about it, I don't think I've ever heard a band that has been on Fat trash them once they've left to go to other labels. It always seems to me they've maintained good relationships with their bands throughout the years.
Very true. If we look back at Teenage Bottle Rocket, who just left Fat, like Teenage Bottle Rocket had said, we love Fat. In a sense, to Teenage Bottle Rocket was saying, we're going with a bigger label because they're giving us an opportunity to be with a bigger label. And you can't fault a band for that. You know what I mean? But they said, we still love Fat Records. We're in a good relationship with them. And I think Fat Records isn't like, how dare you leave us? Fat Records is like, thanks for the memories. You know what I mean? So I think Fat Records is a cool label.
Fat has, you know, they have their limit, I guess. Okay, when bands, they seem like they're at least okay when bands. Even NoFX is releasing stuff on Epitaph because, you know, well, I'm sure they had a contract to do that, but, you know, Epitaph had a you know, they have, they still had, even though we compare them, you know, much more marketing muscle in the bank than Fat alone does. So, yeah.
It's also my understanding, I remember reading an interview with Fat Mike within the last 10 years that that said that he only signed bands to one record deals, which obviously gives a lot more flexibility to both artists and labels. So I think that also probably accounts for some of the goodwill that they have going on, because either one can just make a decision very easily to move on, make a clean break.
That's common. Yeah, no,
I mean, Fat these days, I think, is also a little bit more of a lean enterprise.
Yeah.
What was that?
Well, I was going to say, that's for small labels, that's kind of, for the small, like, Discord, Alternative Tentacles, Fat, they all do one record deals because they don't want anybody to get trapped in. But once you start getting higher than Fat, they start doing 2 or 3 album deals.
For sure.
Yeah, and I mean, the completely blew out my whatever I was going to say there. Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, I think Fat these days, I mean... for us in a hotel room somewhere, so he's dealing with super hotel internet.
Oh, I'm back. Yeah, this is pretty whacked out, man.
How many people run Alternative Tentacles, John?
Two. Jesse Luscious and Dominic Dobby.
All right, so if anything got weird there, you know, we're recording with a hotel room internet connection this time, so there might be something weird going on. We want to talk about another record that came out recently that a lot of people seem to like and a lot of people seem to be talking about. This is the debut LP from War on Women that came out on Bridge 9 on February 10th. So did you guys take a look at this? Did you guys check it out? The whole thing is streaming right now. You can find it on Punk News. It's over on SoundCloud as well.
Yeah, honestly,
I checked out half of it. Go ahead, John.
Oh, go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I've only heard about half of it so far. And this is a band, for some reason, I've kind of avoided. I really don't know why. I don't know if it was just the artwork or something. I don't know what it is. But I was listening to it earlier today, and I got to say, I'm liking what I'm hearing so far. I'm about halfway through it, and strong. It's a loud record. It's something I think I can.
It works incredibly well as a pissed off punk record, but that still manages to like to deliver some really solid hooks as it's going on, which you need with this kind of music to kind of keep you into it, you know, despite all the messaging or along. So I mean, I'm cool with that. I like it for that reason. I saw that this is one of those bands where if I was to really sit down and parse the lyrics on this, they would probably hate me. Like if I had to go like check my personal life against like all of the laundry list of ideals being mentioned on this record, I'm sure I must fall short of a few of them. So like I don't know if this band would be my friend.
Let me tell you, I was boohooing this band 2 weeks ago. I was kind of boohooing this band a week ago. I have to take back everything I said. I was wrong. I listened to this album. This album is a great, it's a very, very, very good album. It's not a mind-blowing album, but it's an excellent album, and here's why. If you guys remember, I was boohooing 2 weeks ago. I was like, this band isn't doing anything the bands weren't doing from 88 to 92. There's nothing special about this band. I was wrong. Here's why I was wrong. This band clearly is influenced by the bands from like 88 to 92, the hardcore bands, but there's a couple differences. First of all, this band is extremely snappy. It's more accessible, and that makes the music better. It makes the music more exciting, more fun, and basically more charging. Like a lot of these hardcore bands from 88 to 92, it's almost like a lecture. This isn't a lecture. This is like get you fired up. Secondly, there actually are some pretty weird things in this album between songs. I guess what a lot of hardcore bands forget to do is a lot of their songs sound the same, so the album gets boring. This band is clever enough to change it up between songs and actually in songs as well. Adam, you said if you read these lyrics, they would probably hate you, but I interviewed the lead singer for Punk News. Her name's Shauna Potter. And she's cool, man. She's really, really cool. And I think she actually is like pretty easy to get along with. And I don't think she's actually very judgmental as a person. I think she's more interested in attacking concepts than she is people. And I spoke to her, and she was really easygoing. And I gotta say, a lot of people in these kinds of bands, men and women, they're so uptight. They can't joke around. They're always super serious. Shauna was extremely eloquent, extremely smart. Extremely good at speaking. I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Whatever that word is.
Articulate,
unlike myself. But also, you know, she's like, we were joking, she's a big Danzig fan. She's a big Dolly Parton fan. So I highly recommend this band. I think this band is excellent. And the LP is the place to start. This is an excellent band. And further, I mean, you know, I was crying, you know, like, men singers are so boring. Everybody sounds like Third Eye Blind. This is not a band that sounds like Third Eye Blind. This band rips. So I recommend this band.
I think where I'm assuming that I'm doing something wrong, this is me thinking about, like, I put War on Women and Propagandhi in the same realm of, like, super, super political punk bands in my head. And I've always had this feeling that, like, if I was ever, like, stuck in an elevator with like Chris from Propagandhi, he would look me up and down and come up with like 15 reasons that just by standing there, I'm oppressing someone or something, or otherwise failing the world.
I've seen Chris do interviews, and sometimes he does come off as kind of a hard ass, or not even a hard ass, kind of a prick. But I spoke to Shauna, and she was totally cool. And let me tell you, I mean, I try to be an open-minded guy, and I try to be cool. Sometimes, you know, people feel I'm being insensitive or whatever. So if anyone would think that I'm being insensitive, she would, and she was totally cool. So I don't think Shauna Potter or the band thinks everyone has to be exactly like them. I think as long as people try to do their best, maybe, or try to think critically, they're cool with you. So that's what I'm saying, is I think sometimes propaganda draws lines in the sand. It says, if you don't do this, you're wrong. I think War on Women isn't quite as closed-minded and encourages more critical thinking.
Cool. I enjoy this record a lot too. So, you know, my own personal failings as a revolutionary aside.
Well, Adam, you know, I think you're a wonderful person. I think you're just spectacular. So, I wouldn't be so hard. I think the band would be cool with you. Now, Mark, they would not like Mark, let me tell you.
Probably not.
No one does, though.
All right, so let's keep this.
All right, up in the confidence tonight.
Yeah. So what else is coming out? We put a stream up recently by a band from Ottawa, Ontario.
Oh God, this is the worst possible band to follow after War on Women.
Is it? Are you sure? Well, this band from Ottawa is named.
Well, there goes our War on Women cred. I apologize, War on Women.
We have the second LP streaming on Punk News from an Ottawa, Ontario band called Big Dick. On this record called Disappointment, the band plays a bunch of really fun, you know, lo-fi, sludgy, I don't know, post-hardcore-y, but not in an obnoxious way. That's the worst description of a band I can come up with. Songs, and it's really fun, and you should go check it out. John, you make a few comparisons in your write-up of this band. How would you describe Big Dick to people?
People laugh at these comparisons, but I thought I was dead on, man. I think this band sounds heavily influenced by the Amphetamine Reptile bands like Helmet, like Haze XL, like Halo of Flies, like Mudhoney, like, was it Jesus Lizard? Like, you know, that very sludgy, energetic, Unsane, a lot like Unsane. You know, very powerful, you know, edgy, dirty, nasty sounds. But also there's a lot of, I guess, what you call post-hardcore influences. You know, stuff like Title Fight, frankly. So I think it's halfway between Title Fight and Amphetamine Reptile kind of music. And I didn't love this, but I like this. I thought it was kind of nasty and brash. But also it's unique sounding, and it's a newish punk sound that we're not quite familiar with.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, I like hearing when bands like this show up in the mix, not only for my weird Ottawa fetish that I keep expressing on this show, but I think there's a lot of cool music coming from there, and I like hearing bands like this get into the kind of, you know, into the mix of stuff we play on Punk News. To me, this is one of those areas of punk that's consistently interesting, but isn't all that, you know, talked about by, you know, the commenters and everything. So
what do you think of this band's choice for a name? Will that help them or hurt them ultimately? And to begin with, will it help them or hurt them?
On the one hand, it hurts them as far as being Googled. like they gotta be on page, like, you know, 60,000 of the results that
I'm right now. All right, fellas, I'm in a hotel room, so I know they're looking at all the websites I'm looking at, but I'm going to Google Big Dick Band and see, let's see what we get. I'm Googling right now. First thing, Big Dick Bandcamp, then Big Dick Facebook, then Big Dick the Band, then Ottawa Band Big Dick.
Huh. What if you take band off of that?
Let's look. Big Dick. Google. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast, people. We're 12. Yeah, you get exactly what you think you'd get. Precisely.
Cool. All right. Well, you check. Make sure that you've checked image search and the video search and all that too, just so that you're, you know, got all your bases covered. So, anyways, yeah, go to the Punk News website. Listen to Big Dick, because it's kind of cool. And hell, we'll play you a song from it. Let's play the first song off this record. We're gonna play a song called Let Down.
Let Down. We'll be right back. And that okay, would... Go ahead, Adam.
Fuck you, John.
We think of, like, go ahead, Adam, a guy who loves big dick.
Oh, God. This is the absolute most shambly podcast we've ever recorded. I'm sorry if you've endeared it to this point.
It's all my fault. It's because I'm in this hotel room with horrible connection. I probably should have sat out this week and said I'm not going to be on. But I really wanted to talk about the Dwarves, and I really wanted to talk about War on Women because they're both fantastic bands. So listeners, please indulge my desire to talk about two bands that I think are wonderful. So I hope that sits well with you despite the technical difficulties and sexual innuendos on tonight's podcast because we're 12.
But let's also talk about a really cool tour that's coming up that unfortunately is not coming anywhere near me, but whatever. Bad Religion is headed out on the road with Off. So this is happening. It kicks off in, what, late March? Late March, and it goes through, you know, a bunch of southern states in the U.S. that, you know, people live in, apparently. Not me. So let me pull up the list here. Where are we looking at? Yeah, March 21st. So they're kicking off in California, you know, doing stuff in California, Oregon, Utah, Kansas, Colorado, Texas, Nevada. Oh, man, back to California to finish it off again because, you know, why would you go anywhere else? So anyways, all of this is happening. I think it's pretty cool. Bad Religion, for whatever reason, tends to take a lot of younger bands on tour. Off is a little bit, I guess, out of character for the kind of bands that they would take on tour. But, you know, a lot of those guys are from that era, so that's only makes sense.
Adam, I was thinking the exact same thing, actually. Like, precisely the exact same thing. What's interesting about this, of course, as we all know, there's an interesting connection. Keith Morris used to be in what band, Mark?
Circle Jerks.
And Adam, who used to be in Bad Religion but is no longer? Used to play guitar in Bad Religion but does not anymore?
Danzig.
And Greg Hetson. Who used to be in the Circle Jerks? Greg Hetson. So this is an interesting combination. But what I found most interesting about this is that, you know, when Off started, Keith Morris talked about why they went with Vice instead of Epitaph. They actually were ready to sign with Epitaph. But then Keith Morris said, well, if we go with Epitaph, they're just going to do the same old punk thing and we'll be, you know, shown in front of the same audience that we have been with the Circle Jerks. So, of course, Off famously signed with Vice. And frankly, for them, it was the smart move. The Vice signing definitely gave Off a certain hipness, if you will, which a lot of younger people and, I guess, non-punk people or, you know, non-punknews.org type people got hip to Off, and it made Off really big. With regards to that, Off usually tours with much younger bands, NASA Space Universe, Fiddlar, you know, hip, cool bands that wouldn't necessarily be covered by punk news but might be covered by, well, Vice or Burger Records, that whole crowd, you know, cool people. It's rare to see Off tour with a punknews.org staple. So I wonder if they're just doing this to change their strategy. If they're just doing it for fun or if they're, changing up their strategy. It'll be very interesting to see what Off does for their fourth record because the first three Off records were fantastic and they were each a little different, you know what I mean? But the question is, can Off do the Off thing that they've been doing a fourth time in a row? That's my question.
John, given the static that Keith has with the other former members of the Circle Jerks, do you think that this tour would have been able to happen if Greg Hetson were still with Bad Religion?
Yeah, I do because, I mean, think how many years – that's a great question, Mark. Think how many years the Circle Jerks toured as a complete mess. Like, the last decade, the Circle Jerks were a mess, but they kicked ass live, you know? And also, I know Greg Hetson went to a couple Off shows just to check. Remember, I mean, Greg Hetson was technically – The reason that the Circle Jerks broke up, sort of, if you guys remember, Keith Morris when Off formed, and you can read an interview at Punk News with a really good interviewer, I forget who he was, but there's a great interview with Keith Morris when Off first formed, and they said, well, what happened? And Keith went into detail about how a certain member of the Circle Jerks wouldn't show up, and that's why, you know, the Circle Jerks ended and Off began. But after that, Greg Hetson went to some Off shows, so I guess that suggests they're cool. So, I mean, I think they'd be able to, you know, I mean, I don't think, I think Keith Morris, he's crazy, he's weird, he's unique, but I think he's mature in that he's, you know, he can tour with somebody. He's not a big crybaby like Morrissey would be, you know what I mean?
Oh, Morrissey.
Yeah.
Adam,
so,
Adam, what
Morrissey just sucked all the air out of that conversation.
Well, Adam, what do you think of off touring with Bad Religion? Is that a smart move? Is that a change in strategy? Or is it really just a couple of gigs they're doing for fun?
Well, on the one hand, it's a lot more than a couple of gigs. I guess that you are exactly right that it was a wise career move for Off to start by signing to somewhere non-traditional, right? Right. So I guess they can tour with Bad Religion now because they've gone and they've made that name elsewhere. Like they're not doing a tour is not necessarily going to shackle them to kind of the necessarily like the Epitaph audience, the Epitaph crowd at this point. So you know, I could absolutely see why everybody in both bands would want to get together and do that. I don't know if it signals any kind of change of strategy or anything like that. I mean, you know, it's one tour, so we'll have to see what comes out of this.
You know, I'm gonna read a quote from Franz Nicolai, who has nothing to do with this at all, but he actually wrote about, if you guys remember Franz Nicolai, he joined, he left World Inferno, he joined the Hold Steady, and then he left Hold Steady. He's like, in my experience, I'll just say this, and the reason I'm reading this quote is because I think it fits this perfectly. Here's what Franz Nicolai said in 2012 on Punk News. But in my experience, as someone who's been on both sides, I'll just say this. The indie rock world covered all kinds of non-newsworthy things I did since I was in the Hold Steady, and as soon as I left, they were done with me. But the punk world basically said, oh, hey, man, you're back? Cool. Want to do this show? And for that, I will always be grateful. For musicians who actually want to play music for decades, I can't help noticing that a band that puts out an indie rock hit and doesn't follow it up gets excommunicated. A band that puts out a couple indie rock hits and then a sort of mediocre album gets excommunicated. But any punk-identified band that has one album that people liked once can tour forever. A punk band that has a string of great records and then makes sort of a mediocre record, you'll hear people say, yeah, that record sucked, but I'll go see them anyway. And if the next record is good, they'll be stoked all over again. So that's QED in my book. So in a way, Franz Nicolai is saying that the indie world is much more picky than the punk rock world. And that the indie rock world will love you and think you're cool. But when they're done with you, they're done with you. But the punk rock world will always love you. And I wonder if that's the situation here.
Well, it may be. I don't know if the indie rock world has turned against Off or anything, though.
No, but you'll notice...
Like, they seem to still be...
Now, I think we all agree that the third Off record is the best so far, right?
I would say so.
Okay. I agree.
Pitchfork disagrees entirely. Pitchfork goes down one unit with each Off successive Off record. So that would suggest that trend is true. Are you guys there?
There was a little Spanish fleet, a record star, Tito Di P. He heard of singers like Beatles, the chipmunks he's seen on TV. Why not a little Spanish fleet?
All right, let's wrap this up. So what I'm saying is Pitchfork goes down one unit with each successive Off record. So that would suggest that Franz Nicolai's theory is true.
Yeah, I would not doubt that. Well, we're having a lot of weird recording things going on, John, yeah. So let's wrap this up before sprains a foot.
It's all my fault because I think we stumbled on something actually really interesting, so maybe we'll cover it next time on the podcast. I apologize, everybody. This is my fault. What can I say?
That's okay. We'll dock your pay. Yo. So anyways, this has been the Punk News Podcast. If anyone wants to email us, podcast@punknews.org. We'll see you guys in a week.
Later, guys.